Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
To Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried. We're dealing with a lot of contradictions in the world today, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends. Canada, Australia, and the UK have just recognized Palestine as a state. Positive development, except it does nothing to actually halt the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And in Palestine as a whole. It doesn't do anything to stop that. It doesn't stop Canada from trading with Israel or arming Israel or Canadian pension funds from engaging with Israel and Canadian companies from engaging with Israel. It does nothing to penalize the people who are actively engaging in the slaughter, the ongoing slaughter, daily slaughter of civilians in the Gaza Strip. It does nothing to stop this. So you could say this action is essentially symbolic. Maybe it'll have value at some point in the future. But right now it does nothing. It does nothing. It effectively is symbolic. They're acting like they're doing something concrete when in fact they're not. And people continue to die. People continue to starve. People continue to be gunned down at checkpoints as they're trying to get food aid, gunned down by these private military contractors who are brought in, ex-US military service people who are brought in to do this dirty work for the Israeli military, manning these checkpoints at the Gaza border. And of course the bombings continue, the onslaught on Gaza City continues, Israeli tanks going in there, they're blowing up everything in sight. They're using old armored personnel carriers basically as bombs, remote controlled bombs to go and blow up buildings. These are the tactics that the Zionist regime is using right now to enact its genocide. And what Canada is doing nothing to counteract that. Absolutely nothing. And yeah, I mean, it's going to freak people out. There's going to be, all the reactionaries are going to freak out at this. Trump's going to freak out at this. There's going to be a lot of words back and forth. But in the end, like, what is it going to do? Is it going to stop the flow of weapons? Is it going to stop the flow of funding? No, it's not going to do any of that. In the present context, it is empty rhetoric, empty words. And that's a sad thing to have to say, but it's true. It's ugly. It's very ugly. Last night I was proud to return to Guelph spoken word, slam poetry, Guelph spoken word at Witchcraft in downtown Guelph. And I did a poem I didn't want to I didn't want to do it do again. I didn't I by this point after 3 years of genocide. Basically, I hoped it wouldn't be 3 years. I hoped it wouldn't be 3 years. I hope I wouldn't have had to come back from overseas, from working in China, and still have to do this poem. Because there's an ongoing genocide, and I wanted to bring attention to it. And perform this poem in front of an audience, as I had done many times before, 1 year ago. But I did do it again. I did perform this poem, "If I Must Die," by Rifat Alarir. Rifat Alarir was martyred, was killed in an Israeli airstrike, targeted assassination in December of 2023. Very early in the genocide. Rifat, this educator who had educated so many young people in Gaza, taught so many young people in Gaza how to speak English. And not only that, but also to write in English and to write their own works, like their own poetry, their own verse, their own prose, everything. Like he himself was a very accomplished poet in English as well as in Arabic. And so many people were able to express themselves in multiple languages because of him, right? And bring their voices to the world. And that legacy that he left, of his students, that continues to this day. And they're continuing to fight through their words, through their pens, through their voices. I mean, one of the things I said last night, that one of the brutal things about this world is there's so many monsters in this world and not enough monster hunters. Now, Rifat Alarir, he was a monster hunter. Like, he fought against those monsters through his words, through his poetry. And this is what he did through this poem here, "If I Must Die." "If I must die, you must live. To tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings. Make it white with a long tail. So that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad, who left in a blaze and bid no one farewell, not even to his flesh, not even to himself, sees the kite, my kite you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment an angel is there, bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope. Let it be a tale. So that's the poem. That's Rifat Alarir's poem, If I Must Die, which I performed last night at the Guelph Poetry Slam. Want to turn it over right now to the latest report by Geopolitical Economy Report, which discusses the latest ruling by, as if we needed any more confirmation that this is a genocide. I mean, all the genocide scholars, the UN Human Rights Tribunal basically has come out and said openly that this is a genocide in Gaza, you know, and they did that recently. There was another motion before the UN Security Council for a ceasefire in Gaza that the US vetoed. This is the sixth time that's happened. Yeah, we see who's behind the killing. So I'm going to play that clip from Geopolitical Economy Report. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
There is one country in the world that is standing in the way of peace and preventing the war in Gaza from ending, and that is the United States. The USA has repeatedly vetoed resolutions in the United Nations Security Council that call for peace and a ceasefire in Gaza. The latest example was on the 18th of September when 14 of the 15 members of the Security Council voted for a resolution that called for an immediate, unconditional, and permanent ceasefire, including the unconditional release of all hostages. 14 of the 15 members supported this resolution. The United States was the only country that opposed the resolution, and the U.S. had veto power, so it killed the resolution. This was the sixth time in less than 2 years that the U.S. used its veto power to prevent peace in Gaza. And I have to emphasize, this is not just the Donald Trump administration. The previous Joe Biden administration also vetoed four UN Security Council resolutions to continue the war in Gaza. And in less than 1 year, the Trump administration has vetoed another two. And this is just since October 2023, in slightly under 2 years, six vetoes. By the way, China was one of the countries that was loudly calling for peace in Gaza, and China voted in support of this resolution. And China's ambassador to the UN criticized the US veto. He said, quote, "China is deeply disappointed by the result of today's vote. The conflict in Gaza has been dragging on for nearly 2 years, causing an unprecedented humanitarian catastrophe. Time and again, the Security Council has attempted to take actions, only to be forcefully blocked by the United States. How many more innocent lives must be lost before a ceasefire can be achieved in Gaza?" End quote. In its report on this latest U.S. veto, the UN news agency pointed out that this is coming at a time when famine is spreading across the Gaza Strip, and Israel, with the support of the U.S., is trying to take over all of Gaza with plans to ethnically cleanse, to expel 2 million indigenous Palestinians, to colonize all of their land and take it over. And by the way, the United Nations World Food Program officially confirmed in August 2025 that famine is now widespread in Gaza. The World Food Program wrote that, quote, "More than 500,000 people in Gaza are trapped in famine, marked by widespread starvation, destitution, and preventable deaths. By the end of September, more than 640,000 people will face catastrophic levels of food insecurity," end quote. And this famine is not just some accidental act of nature. This was an intentional man-made famine caused by Israel with the full support of the U.S. government, because the U.S. and Israel are using starvation of Palestinians as a weapon of war. And this is why even mainstream Western human rights organizations have said very clearly that Israel is using starvation to inflict genocide against the Palestinian people. Now, United Nations experts in international law have been warning for well over a year that this is a genocide that is happening in Gaza. But this September, a UN commission officially stated that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in a devastating report that was published by the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. I'm reading here from the report that the commission officially sent to the UN Human Rights Council. Quote, "The commission concludes on reasonable grounds that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces have committed and are continuing to commit the following actus reus of genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip." And then the UN commission outlined how Israel has committed four of the five crimes listed in the Genocide Convention that was established in 1948 after World War II. Which, by the way, coincidentally, was the same year that Israel was founded through the mass ethnic cleansing and killing of indigenous Palestinians in what was known as the Nakba, the catastrophe. So this genocide convention establishes, according to international law, how genocide is defined. And if a state commits any of the following five crimes, they are committing genocide. According to the UN Commission, Israel has committed the first four of these five crimes. One, killing members of the group, that is the Palestinians. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, that is the Palestinians. Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or part. And four, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. According to the UN Commission, Israel has committed these four crimes of genocide. The only one that it has not officially established Israel being guilty of yet is the fifth, which is forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. However, I think that Israel could be found guilty of this in their near future as well, especially considering that we have reports that the U.S. government is working with Israel on plans to expel all 2 million Palestinians from Gaza, including Palestinian children. This is called ethnic cleansing. This is part of the U.S.-sponsored genocide that's being carried out. So if we go back to this report that was published by this UN commission, it states very clearly that, quote, "The commission concludes that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces have had and continue to have the genocidal intent to destroy in whole or in part the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip," end quote. This is as clear as it could possibly be. Israel is committing genocide with the full support of the U.S. government. And by the way, there was a section of this report in which the UN Commission emphasized, quote, "The duty to prevent and punish genocide applies not only to the responsible state, but to all state parties to the Genocide Convention, and indeed to all states under customary international law," end quote. So this is another way of saying that the U.S. is complicit, and European countries that have been sending weapons to Israel, like Germany, they are complicit in carrying out genocide, in violating the Genocide Convention. And if that weren't already clear enough, the UN Commission also called on all member states to, quote, "cease the transfer of arms and other equipment or items, including jet fuel, to the state of Israel," end quote. So this is a clear message from the UN Commission of international experts that the U.S. must stop sending weapons to Israel because the U.S. is helping Israel commit genocide. But of course, the U.S. is a complete rogue state. The United States doesn't care what international law states. And the Donald Trump administration is planning to send another $6.4 billion of weapons to Israel. And this isn't just so-called aid. This is sales of weapons to benefit U.S. corporations in the military-industrial complex. So not only is the U.S. facilitating Israel's genocide, not only would this genocide not be possible without the U.S., but furthermore, U.S. corporations, U.S. capitalists are profiting from this genocide against the Palestinian people. And again, I have to emphasize that this is not just the Trump administration. Of course, Trump is currently in power. He's the one backing the genocide. But the genocide started back in October 2023, and for well over a year, it had the support of the Joe Biden administration. And from October 2023 until Biden left office in January 2025, in just over 1 year, the Biden administration sent more than $18 billion of so-called military aid to Israel. Although, again, I need to emphasize that A lot of that so-called aid is actually weapon sales, and Israel was buying these weapons and ammunition and other forms of military support from U.S. corporations that are profiting from this genocide. And I have to say that it was already obvious for well over a year that this was a genocide. This is not just a war that the U.S. and Israel are carrying out. This is a genocide against the Palestinian people. And now the world's leading experts on genocide have come to the same conclusion. The International Association of Genocide Scholars held a vote on a resolution condemning what the U.S. and Israel are doing in Gaza as a genocide, and 86% of members voted to support this resolution. That is the vast, vast majority of international legal experts and historical experts on genocide. And given how obvious this genocide is to everyone, it's being live streamed, international legal institutions have been trying to save face, trying to save their reputation, because they've done nothing to stop this U.S.-Israeli genocide. This is why finally, after over a year of genocide, in November 2024, the International Criminal Court finally issued arrest warrants for Israeli officials, including Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And what was the response of the U.S. government? The Biden administration was considering imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court, the ICC. But then when Trump came in, just a few weeks after Trump's inauguration, in February, the Trump administration officially imposed sanctions on the ICC, which is an enormous slap in the face of international law. The U.S. is a rogue state. And this came after the International Court of Justice, which is the top UN legal authority located at The Hague, the ICJ made a similar decision in January 2024, stating that Israel can be investigated on accusations of committing genocide. This is after South Africa introduced a case at the ICJ accusing Israel of genocide, and that ICJ case now has the support of many countries in the global south, especially in Latin America. And the U.S. and Israel have been blatantly, for well over a year, violating this ruling by judges at the International Court of Justice and continuing to carry out genocide and intentionally causing a famine to ethnically cleanse Palestinians and to colonize, to steal their land. The Washington Post got access to an internal report that is being circulated in the Trump administration where they make it clear that their goal is to expel all 2 million Palestinians from Gaza and to take over the territory. I'm reading here from the Washington Post, quote, "A post-war plan from Gaza circulating within the Trump administration, modeled on President Donald Trump's vow to take over the enclave, would turn it into a trusteeship administered by the United States for at least 10 years, while it is transformed into a gleaming tourism resort and high-tech manufacturing and technology hub," end quote. And this plan would involve a so-called temporary, in scare quotes, temporary relocation of all of Gaza's more than 2 million population. And of course, in the biggest euphemism of the century, the U.S. claims this would be voluntary relocation. But it's not voluntary when the U.S. and Israel have destroyed almost all of the homes and the residential buildings in Gaza. Palestinians are homeless. They have nowhere to live. Their family members have been killed. A huge percentage of the population has been killed. And then the U.S. and Israel are telling them, if you don't leave, you're all going to die. That's not voluntary. This is completely Orwellian fascist language that's being used by these genocidal regimes, the U.S. and Israel, that are blatantly carrying out a genocide, a 19th century style colonial genocide, and everyone in the world can see it, and yet there's no way to stop them because the U.S. empire is this massive rogue regime with the biggest military on earth that threatens the entire world. And with the full support of the genocidal U.S. rogue regime, the Israeli colonial regime is boasting of how they're going to expel Palestinians and turn Gaza into a, quote, real estate bonanza, end quote. I'm reading here from the BBC, quote, "Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, has said that the Gaza Strip could be a real estate bonanza and that he is in talks with the U.S. about dividing up the territory after the war. Speaking at an event in Tel Aviv, he said, quote, "A business plan is on President Trump's table. We've done the demolition phase. Now we need to rebuild," he said, end quote. So again, these are 19th century style colonialists living in the 21st century. They are barbaric colonialists and fascists who plan to ethnically cleanse any Palestinians who survive and then colonize all of their territory. And then the Trump administration, the Trump family, want to profit from real estate deals built on the ethnically cleansed land where Palestinians lived. I mean, this is exactly what the United States itself did. The United States, as a colonial project, is built on the bones of the indigenous peoples who were killed and ethnically cleansed by the U.S. colonizers 200 years ago, continuing, you know, this is a process that went over centuries. This is manifest destiny, this colonialist process, the biggest genocide in human history. And today, the U.S. empire is using Israel as an outpost of the U.S. empire to do the exact same thing, to take over Gaza. Because the Trump administration's plan is that the U.S. will have control over Gaza, not even Israel. It will be the U.S. empire directly doing to the Palestinians exactly what the U.S. empire did to the Native Americans. And this genocidal rogue regime in Washington is withdrawing from all international institutions, so there's no way to stop this genocidal U.S. rogue regime. Trump has already withdrawn the U.S. from numerous U.N. bodies, including the Human Rights Council. Trump also withdrew the U.S. from UNESCO, another U.N. organization. And for the first time ever in history, Trump has also pulled the United States out of its United Nations Human Rights Review. I'm reading here from an article published in The Hill by an American human rights lawyer who previously worked for human rights organizations at the United Nations. He wrote that, quote, "Every 4.5 years on a revolving basis, each of the 193 member countries of the United Nations submits a report to the UN Human Rights Council on its domestic human rights record under international standards. And for the first time, one country, the United States, has refused to submit a national report or participate in the human rights dialogue," end quote. This expert in international law noted that the U.S. government has tried to justify its refusal to participate in this process by condemning the UN Human Rights Council for supposedly failing to condemn human rights violations committed by countries the U.S. doesn't like. But this expert in international law noted that, quote, "This is exactly wrong. For the last 17 years since the universal review process began, every country the U.S. might consider a, quote, egregious human rights violator," end quote, including China, Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Belarus, and Russia, has repeatedly participated in the process, received the statements of NGOs and UN agencies publicly posted in the process, and subjected itself to a dialogue on its human rights record, in which every other UN member, including the U.S., European Union members, and other democracies, actively participate. Everyone has received recommendations for improving human rights compliance," end quote. This passage is so important because what it shows is that the United States is the world's leading violator of human rights. Of all of the countries in the world, the U.S. is a genocidal rogue regime that spits in the face of international law and refuses to abide by international law. Meanwhile, U.S. adversaries like China, Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Belarus, and Russia, they are participating in these United Nations bodies. They are participating in the UN Human Rights Review every 4.5 years. It is the U.S. that is not doing it. It's the U.S. that is trying to sabotage the UN while Washington's adversaries, who were told supposedly, according to Western propaganda, are authoritarian regimes and violate human rights, they're the ones that are actually upholding human rights more than the genocidal rogue regime in Washington, the United States of America. This is the reality in the world. The genocidal U.S. rogue regime is the biggest violator of international law. It's the biggest violator of human rights. The U.S. has invaded dozens of countries just in my lifetime. Iraq 2 times, Afghanistan, Libya, attacking Syria, Yemen, dozens of other countries with not only military interventions, but coups, regime change operations, illegal sanctions that violate international law. No other country comes even remotely close to the blood-soaked crimes of the genocidal U.S. rogue regime. And we now see that it's sponsoring another genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. And all international legal experts are saying it very clearly. This is the true face of the U.S. empire. And yes, Donald Trump is very explicit about it. He says, we are an empire. We don't care about international law. We don't care about this propaganda about democracy and human rights. He has lifted the veil. He has taken the mask off of the U.S. empire and showed its true face. But this did not start with Donald Trump. Joe Biden was basically doing the same thing as Trump, but he was using this ridiculous Orwellian propaganda rhetoric of democracy and human rights and multilateralism, like Barack Obama. But go back to George Bush and the illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003. Go back to the Vietnam War, the Korean War. This is the true face of the U.S. empire. Trump is the true face of the genocidal U.S. rogue regime. And finally, more and more people around the world are waking up to it because it's become completely impossible to go along with the previous illusion in the 1990s that the U.S. was supporting democracy and human rights. No one actually believes this propaganda anymore, which is why even Trump and the U.S. government officials in Washington are no longer even pretending to care about this illusion. And this is why we desperately need a new multipolar world order in which the U.S. empire can no longer carry out all of these horrific crimes around the world. This is why we desperately need a new international system, an international political system, an international legal system, and an international financial system. These are the kinds of issues we talk about here regularly at Geopolitical Economy Report. I am Ben Norton. I am the editor-in-chief of Geopolitical Economy Report. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. Please like and subscribe. Please share this. I will see you all next time.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today. Everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. I would retaliate.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried. And that was Loki, the incomparable Loki, the brilliant Loki from his album Soundtrack to the Struggle. And that song was Soundtrack to the Struggle.
No.
As you could hear, that was not just about Palestine. That was about all these people who are fighting for liberation around the world. It's like the struggle. The struggle that connects all of these situations, all of these countries, all of these lands, all these peoples who are fighting for liberation. And we support them when we stand with Palestine as well. And I know it's hard. You know, many people will see things as being very bleak right now. I mean, we're dealing with an aggressor in Gaza, you know, in Palestine, an aggressor, this, you know, genocidal Israeli military back to the hilt by a superpower, by the United States, by Europe's militaries as well, by Canada's military, you know, and its government, its institutions, and its financial institutions, and, you know, the banking system, and all the people's retirement savings are bound up in this genocidal monstrosity. You know, like, it just seems everything is connected here. Everything's being funneled to the destruction of the people in Palestine. And a lot of people, you know, especially those people who have the luxury of giving up and turning away and living insulated suburban lives. Right? Like, the temptation is, yeah, to shut off, turn away, focus on yourself, on your little world. But that's not going to make anything go away. That's not going to solve any problems. That's you burying your head in the sand. And it shows how privileged you are, for one thing. And how out of touch you are, I would say, like, more so than that. There are people who do not have that privilege. People who have to fight. They have to fight to survive. That's what the people in Palestine are doing. They're fighting like heroes. They're fighting like heroes every day. And there are many people throughout the world who stand with them in their struggle, who do what they can to support them. Whether it's the people in Yemen who are physically supporting them, you know, blocking access to the Red Sea to Israeli ships and any ship that's affiliated with Israel, you know, like, literally shooting at them. You know, firing missiles at Ben Gurion Airport, you know, so, like, Israel can't, like, continue to be a tourist trap or any of that kind of stuff, right? Like, it's like, yeah, cutting, you know, actually dealing body blows to the Israeli economy. And certainly when I did my program in July and talked about how all the damage that Iran's missiles did to Israel, you know, massive damage that was inflicted on Israel, on the apartheid state in June, in the course of just 12 days. You know, Israel is not invincible. Like, the monsters who are inflicting this on the people of Gaza, they are not invincible. They never will be. They never have been. All around the world, their support is eroding. Like, people around the world, like, the vast majority of people, they know who the bad guys are here. There's no illusions. They don't fall for the propaganda and the BS that the CBC continues to put out, just absolutely shameless. CBC, BBC, like, honestly, we're getting in a situation where the public broadcasters in Canada and the UK, they're worse than a lot of the private networks when it comes to covering Palestine. You know, still denying that it's a genocide. You know, completely following the government line on that. Absolutely shameful. Absolutely shameful. But we also have to remember, like, the long haul of history. The people will win. The people always win in the end. That's how history works. No society can exist without the people. Without the working people who make everything run. Make everything operate. They are the base of everything. And certainly if we look at what the working people in Genoa and these other brave working class people around the Mediterranean who were supporting the Freedom Flotilla, which is currently on its way to Gaza, the biggest flotilla ever, more than 50 ships, and more seem to be added every day, trying to break the blockade, break the stranglehold, break the starvation siege that's being inflicted on Gaza. Brave people are doing that, and working class people around Europe are standing with them. And working class people around the world, it's the same thing, standing with them. And standing with the people in Palestine. They know, right? Like, they won't be fooled. They won't be fooled by all the BS in the media. Like, they know what's going on. They know what's going on. More and more people know what's going on. And resistance is getting stronger, not weaker. Always remember that. The people will win. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
With the emergence of capitalism, class power and privilege also were justified as manifestations of human nature. People are selfish. Some are go-getters, others are laggards. The system rewards and encourages the creative and the inventive and punishes the slothful and parasitic. But if it's so natural and it's so inevitable, why were the laws rewritten during the 19th century to protect and to arm the privileges of finance capital and industrial capital? I mean, if it was a natural thing that would just play itself out in the free market, why did you need the state? Why did you need to set up eminent domain laws, which were used to wipe out small property owners to the advantage of canal and railroad speculators? Or, as is done today, eminent domain still used to wipe out small property owners to make way for big developers and corporate investors who build their office buildings and shopping malls. Why were labor laws written to deprive workers of any means of self-protection? If it was all natural, everybody in their place, just as Plato said, the carpenter doing his carpentry, why did you need a law that made it a crime for the carpenter to talk to another carpenter and join together to try to better their lives? Why were gun thugs needed, and sheriffs, and Pinkerton detectives, and company goons, and state militia, and the U.S. Army used to keep people down? These people who were naturally in their place in this natural system that's part of the natural outgrowth, the ordinary diurnal activity of human nature every day. This civilization built on the gun, and the sword, and the rope, and the whip, this is all perfectly natural, unforced, uncoerced. If it was so uncoerced, why is it a history of the most artificial coercive powers of the state, used repeatedly to give the wealthy every advantage and every predominance, as it's still being used to this day, right now, as we sit here and talk? If it's so natural, then why do they need death squads in El Salvador? If it's so natural to defend that imperialism and defend that natural system of capitalism, then why are people risking their lives against it in many parts of the world? Why use every subterfuge to keep the mass of people down, keep them divided, keep them disfranchised, if they're such laggards and if they're so uninterested in self-betterment? No, they're supposed to be interested in self-betterment. They're supposed to be interested in individual, selfish betterment. I want to better myself. I want to get ahead. Get ahead of what? Get ahead of the others. It's when they do collective self-betterment. It's when they begin to see that their self-interest is an interest of a whole social formation. That's when it becomes unnatural. And that's when we've got to go in there on that.
People.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, and that was Handsome Furs with Serve the People. Getting ready to, well, sign off for another week here back in the USSR, but just want you all to just stay in solidarity with Palestine. Keep doing what you can to fight, you know, educate, agitate, organize, do whatever you can in your communities. Whatever you can do to stop the genocide. Absolutely essential. And as Justin Podor on his excellent Anti-Empire Project podcast, which you should all check out, as he says at the end of all his shows, just hang in there. So stay solid, comrades and friends. See you next time.
I pity the country, I pity the state, and the mind of a man who thrives on hate. Small are the lives of cheats and of liars, of bigoted news press, fascist town crier. Deception annoys me, deception destroys me. The Bill of Rights throws me in jails, they all know me. Frustrated are churchmen, the saving of soul men, the tinker, the tailor, the colonial governor. They pull and they palm me, they're seeking to draw me away from the roundness of the light. Civil servants, they thrive off my body. Their trip is with power, back bacon and welfare. Police, they arrest me, materialists test me, pollution it chokes me, movies they joke me, politicians exploit me, city life that jades me. Hudson Bay fleece me, hunting laws freak me. Government is bumbling, revolution's rumbling. To be ruled in impunity is tradition continuity. I pity the country, I pity the state, and the mind of a man who thrives on hate.